Tuesday, 18th of June. Stitch is a lovely, bright place, formed inside the skeleton of what was once a Victorian haberdashery. It still has the original curved bow windows at the front and a huge sash window at the back overlooking the tube tracks. In between are six sewing machines in two rows. Alex spots Josie at the machine nearest the back. She has earphones in, and her hair is tied back into a low ponytail. Alex takes her canvas bag to the desk and smiles. "Hi," she says. "Is Josie in today?" The woman calls over her shoulder to Josie, who looks up, and then pulls out her earphones and smiles widely when she sees Alex. She holds up a finger and mouths, "Just 1 minute," and then finishes what she's doing. "Hi, Alex," she says, brushing bits of thread and lint off her jeans. "You came." "Yes. You reminded me that I had things I've been meaning to get altered since literally before I had children." She opens the bag and shows Josie two dresses. One of them, a maxi dress with straps that are too long. Another, a maternity dress that she's always wished she could still wear because the print is so pretty. "You'll need to put this one on," Josie says, holding out the maxi dress, "so we can see how far to take the straps up. Here." She pulls back the curtain on a changing cubicle. "I'll just be out here when you're ready." Alex takes the dress from Josie and steps into the cubicle, slips out of her summer dress and puts on the maxi dress. It's odd to feel Josie's hands against the skin on her shoulders and her upper arms as she fiddles with the straps. "Strange cut," she says. "Given that you're already quite tall, you'd think the straps would be perfect on you. Can't imagine anyone shorter standing a chance with this dress. It's like they think all women are meant to be built like giraffes." She slides the pins into the fabric and then stands back and smiles. "That okay?" she asks, turning Alex towards the mirror. Alex nods. "Perfect." Then Alex changes into the maternity dress and she and Josie chat about pregnancy as she pins the waist into shape. Her hands are fluttery around Alex's midriff. She smells like dust overlaid with body spray. Alex redresses and waits while Josie rings the work through the till, applies the 20% discount with a flourish, and presents her with the bill. "So," Alex says, "what was it you wanted to talk to me about?" Josie glances quickly about herself, checking that nobody is listening in, and then says, "I saw that you're a podcaster. I mean, I heard you saying your name in the Lansdowne that night, and I thought it sounded familiar, so I googled you and realised why I'd heard of you. I'm not a stalker or anything, and I listened to some of your podcasts. So inspiring, those women, I mean, the things they've been through, it's just incredible, and I..." She pauses and checks around herself again. "I hope this doesn't sound strange, but I wondered, have you ever thought about doing a podcast about someone who's about to change their life, rather than someone who already has?" "Oh," says Alex in surprise. No, I haven't. But I can see how that could be interesting." "Yes, that's what I thought. You could follow someone's progress as they break through their barriers and achieve their goals, as they're doing it." "Yes, absolutely. But I suppose the problem is that people often don't realise that their lives are changing for the better until after the event, when they stop to look back." Josie frowns. "I'm not sure that's true. Because listen, it's happening to me. It's happening to me right now. I've been living the same life for 30 years. 30 years. Been with my husband since I was 15 years old. Nothing has ever changed. I have worn the same clothes, I had the same hairstyle, had the same conversations at the same times, sat on the same side of the same sofa every single night of my life for 30 years. And the things..." She pauses, and Alex sees a red flush pass from her collarbones up to her neck and cheeks. "The things that have happened to me. Bad things, Alex. Really bad things. My marriage..." She pauses, takes a breath. "My husband is... He's very complicated, and our family life has been quite traumatic at times. And I don't know, listening to your podcasts, those amazing women. I'm 45. If I don't break free of the past now, then when will I? It's time for me to change everything. And I'm not asking you to help me, Alex. I just want you to... She stops as she tries to find the right words. You want me to tell your story? Yes, that's exactly what I want. Because I know I look quite ordinary, but my story is extraordinary and it deserves to be heard. What do you think? Alex is silent for a moment, not sure how to respond. Her instincts tell her very strongly to walk away. But she came here for a reason. She came here because the journalist inside her couldn't resist the tantalizing essence of the words, "There's something I'd like to talk to you about." She wanted to hear what Josie was going to tell her. And now she's heard that Josie has an extraordinary story to share. Even though Alex is slightly repelled by Josie's intensity, she is also sickeningly drawn to the idea of finding out what it is. "I think," she says, "that it sounds like a very interesting idea indeed. What are you doing tomorrow?" Alex walks home through the back streets between Kilburn High Road and Queen's Park. The June breeze is cool, and she walks on the sunny side of the street. She has 2 hours before she has to collect the children from school, and she can't face going back to work on the edits for the final podcast of the All Woman series. She's bored of listening to women who made good decisions and ended up exactly where they wanted to be, and feels strongly and sharply that what she wants right now, as dark clouds begin to gather across the light in her own life, is to bear witness to the dark truth of another woman's marriage. Alex feels the buzz of anticipation build inside her. She's been doing the same thing for so long. The thought of doing something completely different is stimulating. She takes a detour to the boutique on Salisbury Road and spends an hour leafing through clothes she doesn't need before leaving with a pair of forest green frame sunglasses that she also doesn't need. She goes to a delicatessen and buys expensive antipasti to eat in the garden tonight so that she doesn't have to cook. She buys brownies from Gales and a cactus plant from the trendy florists. The money she spends is Nathan's money. Nathan's money that he earns selling leases on glamorous high-rise office space in various corners of the city. He works so hard. He earns so well. He's so generous. He never looks at bank statements or makes snidey comments about clusters of designer carrier bags. His money, he always tells her, is her money. The money she earns is also her money, but he doesn't expect her to contribute to family expenses. And as she thinks about these things, she feels the pros and cons list in her head start to shift a little, swinging back towards the pros. The memory of the empty bed on Sunday morning starts to fade away. The thought of him unconscious on a hotel bed diminishes. The hum of low-level anger and resentment mutes. She will open wine tonight. They will eat the expensive food on the terrace and sit and marvel at the way the midsummer sky still light at 10, and let the children stay up past their bedtimes, and listen to music on Spotify, and have the sort of night that people expect someone like her to have.
Wednesday, the 19th of June. Josie stares at herself in the mirror the next morning. Her skin looks nice. It's hereditary, nothing to do with expensive creams or treatments. Her hair needs a trim. It's far too long and splitting at the ends. She unzips her denim makeup bag and takes out a tube of mascara. She never normally wears makeup to walk the dog, but then she never normally meets a famous podcaster halfway through walking the dog. She colours her face with bronzer using a huge fluffy brush and puts on some tinted lip balm. Then she pulls on her favourite dress. It's made of denim, and buttons up the front to a shirt collar and ties up at the waist with a matching belt. She wears it with her denim plimsolls and appraises herself in the full-length mirror. Walter is in the window overlooking the street, staring at his laptop. She tries to avoid his gaze as he will wonder about the makeup and the smart dress, and she doesn't want to tell him about the meeting with Alex until it has happened and she knows what it means. She stands in the hallway and puts the dog's harness on. "Taking Fred out now," she calls out. "See you in an hour or so." Walter nods and says, "See you soon." She turns to leave and pauses for a moment outside Erin's room. Erin will be sleeping now. She sleeps late, until at least lunchtime. She could open the door a crack, just grab a glimpse of her baby. But she knows what else lies on the other side of that door and she doesn't have the stomach for it. Not now. Maybe later. Halfway to Salisbury Road, Fred starts dawdling, so she picks him up and tucks him into his dog carrier. She loves the feeling of having him there, close to her chest. It reminds her of carrying her babies in slings. Baby Bjorns, they were called. Walter had thought they were for hippies, sneered at her clipping the babies into them, said, "What's wrong with a pushchair? Worked fine for my other two." She spots Alex immediately, by the beacon of her white blonde hair and angular face and shoulders. She waves, and Alex waves back, and then they do a kissing thing that takes Josie by surprise as she never really kisses anyone. She follows Alex to one of the trendy coffee shops on Salisbury Road, the one she walks past all the time and never stops at, and she tries to insist on buying the drinks, but Alex won't let her, says it's a business expense, which makes Josie get goosebumps. "So," says Alex a moment later, pushing her coffee cup to one side and sliding an iPad across in its place. "I've been thinking a lot about your idea. And at first, I wasn't sure. You've listened to my podcasts, so you know the format. They are fully-fledged stories with a beginning, middle, and end, which means that even before I start recording, I know what the format will be. I've done it 20, 30 times, and I know what I'm doing. I know how to get the story onto tape and how to edit it to make it gripping for the listener. But this would be very different. I have no idea how your story is going to end, but you're promising me it will be worth following, and so I'm already kind of hooked. I want to know too. And if I want to know, then maybe my listeners will want to know. So I think we could give this a bash, you know? It won't be for my all-woman series. That's finished now. This will be something completely new and different. A one-off. The interviews would be mainly studio-based, but I'd also love to talk to you in various locations that tie in with your story. Where you were brought up, where you went to school, where you met your husband, all that kind of thing. And then we can take it forward into the traumas you mentioned and what you're going to do next to escape the trap you found yourself in. I thought I might call it, 'Hi, I'm your birthday twin.' I don't know if you remember, but those were your first words to me and the ladies at the Lansdowne. I feel like it signifies the beginning of a journey that could go in absolutely any direction. The very first moment of me colliding with you. The spark, if you like. How does that sound?" Josie realizes she has stopped breathing and moving. Her teaspoon is still suspended over her Americano, the sugar she'd added still unstirred at the bottom of the cup. She stares at Alex and nods. "Yes. It sounds good." Alex smiles. "Great," she says. "It would mean spending a fair bit of time together, but you work part-time and your children are fully grown, so maybe you'd be able to squeeze it in. An hour or two, here and there." "Yes," says Josie. "Yes, definitely. Where do you do it? Where do you record?" "At my house, I have a studio. Alex's fingertips clutch her golden bee pendant and slide it back and forth along the chain.
We could make a test episode. Just you and me chatting for an hour in my studio. I'll edit it and get something back for you to listen to, no obligation. You'd be totally free to walk away from it if you don't like how it sounds. I promise.
Josie thinks of Alex's 8,000 followers on Instagram. In her mind's eye, she sees a sea of white blonde women with broad shoulders and oversized sunglasses, all listening to her, through expensive AirPods as they cook healthy dinners for their red-haired children in open-plan kitchens. She shakes her head slightly to dislodge it. It's too much. Instead, she zooms in on the central pinprick notion of sitting in Alex's studio for an hour, just the two of them, talking. She has so much she needs to share. She picks up her coffee cup and takes a sip, then carefully places it back in the saucer. I suppose we could give it a bash, she says. We could at least try. Walter is in the kitchen when she gets back from coffee with Alex. He's making tea and offers to make her one too, and she says, no thanks, I just had a coffee. He raises an eyebrow at her.
Oh yeah? On your own?
No, she says, taking Fred out of his carrier and putting him down on the floor. No, I... She freezes. She can't. He would be horrified. He would talk her out of it. I bumped into a mum from Erin and Roxy's old primary school. We just had a quick catch-up. She turns away, but recovers herself quickly. It wasn't even a lie. It was true.
Nice?
Yes, very nice. We might meet up again. She knows he won't ask anything else. Walter didn't really have much to do with the girls' schooling, especially after all that business with the social services when Erin was in year six. I'm going to get ready for work, she says, hanging Fred's harness back on the coat rack. Walter nods and then does a double take as he comes out from behind the kitchen counter with his tea.
You look all dressed up,
he says, gesturing at her button-down dress.
She looks down at her dress.
Yes, she says. All my other summer stuff needs a wash, and I thought, why not?
You look lovely, he says, nodding approvingly. Very slim.
Thank you, she says, touching her stomach. Just a flattering cut, I suppose. He appraises her once more and nods.
Lovely.
He smiles, but there's no warmth in his voice.
Thursday, 20th of June. Alex's studio is at the bottom of the garden. It was Nathan's 40th birthday present for her, in recognition of how well her newly launched podcast was doing. He'd sent her away on a girls' weekend, had it all professionally fitted, then wrapped the shed in an oversized ribbon and guided her to it blindfolded on her return. Is it any wonder that Alex is so torn about her marriage when her husband is capable of such acts of generosity and affection, whilst also capable of making her want to die? She switches on the power for the Nespresso machine at the wall and places a vase of flowers on the desk. At 10 o'clock, the doorbell rings, and Josie is on her doorstep with her little dog in a shoulder bag. I hope it's okay to bring Fred, says Josie. I should have checked. No problem at all, Alex replies. I have a cat, but as long as he's in the studio with us, she won't bother him. Come on through. Your house is beautiful, says Josie as she follows Alex through the open-plan kitchen at the back of the house and out into the garden. Thank you so much. My house was probably beautiful once. It's one of those big stucco villas, you know. But the council chopped them into flats in the 70s and now they're ugly. Alex smiles and says, so sad. London's full of places like that. Josie oohs and ahs about Alex's studio, runs her hands over the gleaming recording equipment, pats the fat foam head of the microphone. "Will I be talking into that?" she says. "Yes." Josie nods, her eyes wide. She lets the little dog out of its dog carrier and it trots around, sniffing everything. Alex makes Josie a cup of tea and herself an espresso. They pull on their headphones and face each other across the recording desk. Alex does a test run with Josie, asks her the standard question about what she had for breakfast, and then they begin. Josie, first of all, hello, and thank you so much for giving me your time so generously. I cannot tell you how excited I am to start this project. For listeners coming across from my regular podcast series, All Woman, welcome, and thank you for taking a punt on me doing something new. For new listeners who've come upon this podcast from some other angle, welcome. So let's kick off with an easy question. Josie, your name, what is it short for? If it is in fact short for anything. Josie shakes her head. No, she says. No, just Josie, not short for anything. Named after anyone? No, not that I know of. My mum is called Pat. Her mum was called Sue. I think she just wanted to give me a pretty name, you know, something feminine. So, just to set up the premise for everyone, the story behind the title of this podcast, Hi, I'm Your Birthday Twin, is that those were Josie's first words to me when we met in our local pub the night before we both turned 45. Josie and I are not just birthday twins, but we were born in the same hospital too. And now we live less than a mile apart in the same corner of Northwest London. So, before we get into your life story, let's talk about your birth story. What did your mum tell you about the day you were born? Josie blinks. There's a ponderous silence that Alex already knows she might need to edit out. Well, she says eventually. Nothing much, really. Just that it hurt. Alex laughs. Well, she says, yes, that's a given. But what did she tell you about the day itself? The weather, the midwife, the first time she saw you? There follows another silence. Like I say, nothing. She never said anything. Just that it hurt so much she knew she'd never do it again. And she didn't? No, she didn't. So, no siblings? No siblings, just me. What about you? Oh. Josie stops and puts her hand against her heart. Sorry. Am I allowed to ask you questions? Yes, absolutely. And I am one of three girls, the middle. Oh, lucky you. I'd have loved a sister. Sisters are the best. I'm very lucky. And tell me about your mum, Pat. Is she still around? Oh, God, yes, very much so. She lives on the same estate where I was born. Runs the community centre. Looks after the old people. Shouts at the politicians. Works with the anti-gang unit, all of that. Larger than life, louder than life. Everyone knows her. It's like she's famous. What about your father? He was never in the picture, my dad. My mum got pregnant by accident and then went off and had me without even telling him. I've never met him. Alex shuts her eyes and mentally loops back to the man in the pub on her birthday, who she had assumed to be Josie's father. So, in the pub on the night we met, the man you were dining with, that was your... That was my husband, yes. Not my father. And no, you are not the first person to make that mistake. My husband, Walter, is a lot older than me. I've been with him since I was 15. Josie pauses and glances up at Alex. Alex tries to hide her surprise. 15, she repeats. And he was... 42. Alex falls silent for a moment. Wow, that's... Yes, I know. I know how it seems, but it didn't quite feel like it sounds at the time. It's hard to explain. Josie purses her lips and shrugs. There's power in being a teenager. I miss that power in some ways. I would like it back. In what way was there power? Josie shrugs again. Just in the way that you have something a lot of people want, a lot of men want, and a lot of them want it. They want it so much.
It? You mean youth?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. And when you meet someone who is very clear about what they want, and you know that the only thing that stands between what they want and what you have is your consent, sometimes as a very young girl, there's a power in giving that consent, or at least that's how it felt at the time. That's how they make you feel. But really, it's not, is it? I can see that now. I can see that maybe I was being used, that maybe I was even being groomed. But that feeling of being powerful right at the start, when I was still in control, I miss that sometimes. I really do. And what I'd like more than anything is to get it back. Alex leaves a brief silence to play out, to allow Josie's words the space they need to hit home to her listeners. She maintains her composure, but under the surface, her blood races with shock. And you and Walter, how did you meet? He was a contractor doing the electricals on our estate. He was the project leader, and my mum, of course, made it her business to get involved with it all. So one day when I was about 13, I was sitting in my room and the doorbell rang, and I looked out and he was standing there, had his high-vis vest on, holding his hard hat in his hand. That was the first time I saw him. Alex says, "And what did you think?" Josie issues a small laugh. "I was 13. He was 40. And there wasn't much more to think, really. It wasn't until my 14th birthday that I could tell there was something else going on. He walked into the house when I was blowing out the candles on my birthday cake. I was there with my best friend, Helen. My mum invited him to stay for a slice of cake, and he sat next to me, and it was..." Josie exhales and makes a sound like she's been punched in the throat. "It was just there, like an invisible monster in the room." "A monster?" "Yes, that's what it felt like. His interest in me. It felt like a monster."
"So you were scared of him?"
"Not of him, no. He was nice. I was scared of his wanting me. I couldn't believe that nobody else could see it, only me. It was so big and so real. But my mother didn't see it. Helen didn't see it. But I saw it. And I was scared of it.
So it didn't feel like power then?"
"Well, no. And yes, it felt like both things at the same time. It was confusing. I became obsessed with the idea of him. But it was another year until anything happened."
Helen Lloyd is Josie Fair's school friend.
Josie and me were best friends from when we were about 5 years old, from primary school. She was always a bit odd, controlling. She didn't like it when I had other friends. She always wanted to make things about her. Passive-aggressive is the term these days. She would never just come straight out and tell you what was bothering her. She made you go all around the houses to get to it. She was a sulker, too. The silent treatment. We'd already started to grow out of each other when she met Walter.
So what was that like, when she met Walter?
Weird. I mean, he was an old man, virtually. And that was that. From her 14th birthday, she just disappeared into this other world with an old man.
Would you say Walter Fair groomed Josie?
Well, yes. Obviously. But as bad as it sounds, as weird as it sounds, it was a two-way street, you know? She wanted him. She wanted him. And she made him want her.
...11 a.m. Josie walks home from Alex's house an hour later. Her head spins with all of it. She thinks of Alex's home. From the front, a neat terraced house with a bay window, no different to any other London Victorian terraced house, but inside a different story. A magazine house. Ink blue walls, and golden lights, and a kitchen that appeared weirdly to be bigger than the whole house, with stone-grey cabinets and creamy marble counters and a tap that exuded boiling water at the touch of a button. A wall at one end reserved purely for the children's art. She remembers pinning the girls' artwork to the fridge with magnets and Walter tutting and taking it down because it looked messy. Then the garden, with its fairy lights and winding path and the magical shed at the bottom that contained yet another world of wonder. Even the cat. A cat unlike any she'd seen before. A Siberian, apparently. Tiny and fluffy, with the huge green eyes of a cartoon Disney princess. Her hand goes to the inside pocket of her handbag, where she touches the smooth skin of the Nespresso pod she'd taken when Alex wasn't looking. There was a huge jar of them on the shelf behind the recording desk, all different colours, like oversized gemstones. She doesn't have a Nespresso machine at home, but she just wanted to own a little bit of Alex's glamour. Tuck it into a drawer in her shabby flat. No, it was there. Walter is at his laptop in the window when she gets home. He looks at her curiously, his eyes huge through the strong prescription of his reading glasses. She'd told him she was seeing the school mum again. He'd raised an eyebrow but not said anything. Now he says, "What's really going on?" A spurt of adrenaline shoots through her. "What do you mean?"
"I mean," he says, "you've been gone ages. You can't have been drinking coffee all this time."
"No," she says. "I went to see my gran after, at the cemetery." A pre-planned fib.
"What for?"
"I don't know. I just had a really weird dream last night about her and it made me want to go and see her. Anyway, I need to get ready for work. I'll be back in a tick."
She walks towards her bedroom, hears the sound of Erin's gaming chair through her bedroom door. Squeak, squeak. Notices that the smell from Erin's room is starting to drift out into the hallway now. She can't put it off for much longer. But not now, not today, tomorrow, definitely. She touches Erin's door with her fingertips as she passes, then kisses them. In her bedroom, she picks up the photograph of her small girls from the top of the chest of drawers and kisses that too. Then she takes the Nespresso pod from inside her handbag and tucks it into her underwear drawer. Right at the very back.
Jason Fair is Walter Fair's son.
The last time I saw Dad, I guess when I was about 10.
And why is that?
Because he left my mom for a teenager. And my mom was so disgusted that she emigrated us out of the country.
And that teenager was...
That teenager was Josie Fair, yes.
Sorry. Sorry, could we just...
...8 p.m. Nathan doesn't come home from work that night.
Alex feels the dreadful inevitability of it in her gut from the minute the clock ticks over from 8 p.m. to 8:01 p.m. He said he'd be home at 7. Even accounting for last-minute delays or phone calls or problems on the tube, 8 o'clock marks the cut-off point for explainable lateness and tips into something darker. She texts him. He doesn't answer. At 8:30, she calls him. It goes to voicemail. And she knows. Alex knows. When the children are in bed at 9, Alex takes a glass of wine into the studio and listens back to her interview with Josie from the morning. They had talked for over an hour, but hearing it now, Alex suspects that the whole conversation will be edited down to about 10 minutes. And those 10 minutes will be the ones that Josie had spent talking about how she met her husband. Alex had been barely able to breathe. She'd merely nodded, her eyes wide, not interjected with questions, just listened and absorbed. A 14-year-old girl. A 41-year-old man. Alex thinks of the man she'd barely noticed in the restaurant on Saturday night. The man she had assumed to be Josie's father. Nondescript, balding, faded, bespectacled. They'd stopped recording before Alex had been able to uncover more about what had happened after the birthday cake moment on Josie's 14th birthday. What had led to Josie and Walter becoming a couple. They will discuss that at their next meeting. But the tiny prickle of excitement that she's been feeling since the first moment she decided to make a show about Josie is growing by the minute. She can sense something bigger than her here, something dark and brilliant with every fibre of her being. Back indoors, Alex looks at her empty wine glass and considers for a moment the possibility of topping it up. But no, it is gone 10 o'clock and she is tired. And she wants a clear head tomorrow when she wakes up in what she already knows will be an empty bed and has to deal with the aftermath of Nathan's latest bender so soon after the last, and this one on a school night. Her message to him remains unread, and her final attempt to call him goes through to voicemail again. She feels adrenaline pulsing through her, and she knows she won't sleep, but she goes to bed anyway. She tries to read a book, but her heart races. She scrolls through the news on her phone, but it swims in front of her eyes. And she feels suddenly, strangely, that she wants to talk to Josie. Josie with her waxy skin and haunting voice and her dark, dark eyes. Josie who doesn't know Nathan, who didn't dance at their wedding, who has no investment in the mythical mirage of their marriage. She sends her a message. It was lovely talking to you earlier. Thank you so much for your time. I just listened to the recording and I can see how this is going to take shape and I'd really like to continue with the project if you're happy to do so. Maybe next time we could visit the estate where you grew up, where you first met Walter. What do you think? She presses send and stares for a few minutes at her phone, looking for a sign that Josie has seen it, that she is replying. But 10 minutes pass and there is nothing. She finally turns off her screen and lies herself flat, tries to lull herself into a sleep that she knows will not come for many hours.
10 p.m. Josie rests her open book against her chest and looks at the message on her phone screen. It's from Alex. The sight of her words on her screen sparks something inside Josie. Kind of childish delight. Something like a crush. She opens it and reads it in a rush and then again, more slowly. She pictures herself on her Kilburn estate with Alex and she feels a shiver of delight. She could introduce her to her mum, watch her mother's face as it dawns on her that someone like Alex is interested in her daughter. She could picture the confusion followed by yes, no doubt, a flicker of jealousy. She would think that Alex should be making a podcast about her, the legendary Pat O'Neill. And no doubt Alex would have questions for her mother, but they would be questions related only to Josie,
questions to help Alex find out more about Josie, not more about Pat. Her stomach flips pleasantly. She doesn't reply immediately, but goes instead to her browser and Googles Alex Summer. Spends half an hour flicking through photos of Alex, looks at her Twitter feed, at her Facebook page, which is set to private but has a couple of posts visible, at her Instagram feed. She reads listeners' reviews of Alex's podcasts and sees photos of her at award ceremonies in swirling satin dresses. When Josie has had her fill of Alex Summer, she returns to the message but realises that it is gone 11, that it is too late to politely reply. She sighs, turns off her screen, and picks up her book. From somewhere else in the flat, she hears the muted sounds of her husband's voice. She tucks in her earplugs and turns the page of her book.
Friday, 21st of June. Nathan finally replies to Alex's message at 6 a.m. She hears her phone buzz on the bedside table, yanks down her sleep mask, grabs her phone and squints at it. Fuck, sorry, don't know what happened. At Giovanni's. Blacked out. Please don't kill me. She lets the phone fall back onto the bedside table and tugs her mask back down over her eyes. She has 30 minutes before her alarm goes off. She's not wasting it. She didn't get to sleep until after 2 in the end, and her head is thick with tiredness and despair. She tries to claw back the stolen half hour, but her adrenaline is pumping again. Her husband went somewhere last night and has woken up in his friend's flat and doesn't know what happened in between. Her husband, who has a career and a mortgage and 2 children to think about. Her husband, who is 45. A second later, her phone buzzes again. She groans and picks it up. On my way home now. Please don't hate me. I love you. I'm sorry. I'm a dick. Once again, she puts the phone down and pulls her sleep mask over her eyes. But now there is even more adrenaline pumping through her. She is enraged. Please don't hate me, like a whiny little boy. She gives up on salvaging the last half hour of sleep and sits up in bed. She stares for a moment at the messages on her phone and wonders what to do. She decides not to reply, not yet. Not until her rage has subsided. But a moment later, her phone buzzes again and it's him with a plaintive, "Alex!" Her hands shake slightly with rage as she presses call on his number. "Hi." His voice is small and it makes her even angrier. "I didn't get to sleep until 2 a.m, Nathan. 2 a.m, waiting to hear from you, wondering where the fuck you were. And then you message me at 6 a.m. and wake me up, and you know my alarm goes off at 6:30, yet you couldn't even wait for half an hour because you're too fucking selfish. So yes, thanks a lot, Nathan. I've had 4 hours sleep, and now I have to get our kids up and get them ready for school and then do a full day's work, and you don't even know where you've been." "Alex, I'm so sorry. It just..." "Fuck off, Nathan." She turns off her phone and slams it down. Then she gets out of bed and has an extra long shower. By the time she gets the children to school at 8:50, she is calm again. Nathan has messaged 3 more times, professing his dismay at his own behaviour and promising her that it will never happen again. It is Friday, and the weather is forecast to be beautiful this weekend, and Alex is having lunch with her sisters on Sunday, and she doesn't want to hold on to the terrible dark feelings that had her in their nightmarish grip all of last night, and so she forces herself to let them go. After saying goodbye to the children at the school gates, she's about to turn and leave when she remembers that she has a form that needs to be handed into the school office. She goes to the side gate of the school and rings on the bell, is buzzed in a moment later.
"Hi, Alex."
It's Mandy, the office manager.
"Hi, Mandy. This form is for the Natural History Museum trip tomorrow. I'm really sorry. It's been in my handbag for weeks and I keep forgetting to drop it in. Sorry, it's a bit scrunched up."
She passes the scruffy piece of paper across the desk towards Mandy, who smiles and says, No problem, lovey. I've seen worse, I can assure you. And as she says this, Alex looks at her and thinks, Mandy has been working here for 20 years. There was a celebration for her last year to mark the anniversary, the longest serving member of staff. Oh, Mandy, by the way, I've just started talking to a mum whose kids used to be at this school a long time ago. They're in their early 20s now. I wonder if you remember them. Oh, try me. I always pride myself on never forgetting any of my children. Roxy and Erin? Fair? A strange shadow passes across Mandy's face. Oh, she says. Yes, I remember Roxy and Erin. They were... Alex inhales and waits. Mandy glances behind her at the door to the head teacher's office, and then from left to right, before leaning towards Alex and lowering her voice. They were a strange family, I suppose you could say. I mean, Roxy was wild. Oppositional, you know. Turned over furniture. Threw things about. Had to suspend her a couple of times. But Erin was the sweetest thing, total opposite of her sister. So quiet. Had some issues, possibly on the autism spectrum, but wasn't statemented, as far as I can remember. And there was this one time, I think when Erin was in year six, just towards the end of her time here. Mandy pauses and looks around herself again before continuing in a semi-whisper. She came in with a broken arm, and there was all this talk about how she'd fallen out of bed, and then one day she told a friend that it was Roxy. Roxy? Yes. Her younger sister said that she'd done it to her. Had to get the social services involved. It was all very messy. And had she, the younger sister, had she broken Erin's arm? I don't think it was ever proved. But the parents were livid. There were some horrible scenes. Only time I ever met their dad. Big man, big temper. And the mother? Alex nods, her breath held again. She was... really very odd. Wouldn't say boo to a goose. Just stood there with this sort of blank look on her face. Let it all play out as if it was nothing to do with her, you know? And then they took Roxy out. Homeschooled her until she went to secondary school, I seem to recall. Which secondary school did they go to? Queen's Park High, I think. But yes, funny family. Always wondered what happened to them. And you're friends with the mother now, are you? Well, I wouldn't say friends, no, acquaintances. And the girls, have you met them? No. No, not at all. Would love to know what they're both up to now. I never had a good feeling for either of them. Do you know what I mean? Alex nods and smiles.
Sunday, the 23rd of June. On Sunday, Josie makes a roast. She and Walter eat it quietly at the table in the window overlooking the street. It's the only meal of the week they eat at the table. Afterwards, she liquefies the leftovers with her stick blender and spoons them into a bowl for Erin. She covers it with a plate to keep Fred's snout away and puts it on a tray outside Erin's room alongside a chocolate-flavour Muller corner and 2 teaspoons. She still hasn't been in there. The longer she leaves it, the harder it gets. She will go in. Next week, she will go in and clean. Walter said it's not so bad. But she doesn't know how that can be true, given the smell. She washes up slowly and cleans the kitchen thoroughly. By 3 o'clock, it's spotless, as if nothing ever happened. She looks at Walter over the kitchen hatch and says, "Taking the dog out now. Want to come?" She hopes he'll say no, and he does. Sunday afternoon, and the area around Queen's Park is full of the flotsam and jetsam of other people's summer days. Half-drunk plastic pints of honey gold lager, left to go warm outside pubs. Crumpled picnic blankets in the park. Discarded beer cans and pizza boxes overflowing from bins. Melted ice cream puddles on the pavement that she has to drag Fred away from. Other people have been out here all day,
enjoying themselves, enjoying the weather, enjoying their friends and their children. Other people have been living. At the thought of the extraordinariness of other people's lives, she finds her feet leading her subconsciously around the park and towards Alex's road. She keeps her distance. She would be mortified, completely mortified, if Alex were to see her standing here in her scruffy leggings and her denim jacket, loitering around her house on a Sunday afternoon. But she just needs a glimmer, nothing more, of Alex's existence. And then she can return to her flat, ready to deal with the long Sunday evening ahead of her. The view through the front window is obscured by white wooden shutters. The front door is painted a milky blue colour that reminds Josie of a particular dress she had when she was small. On either side of the door is a pair of plants in matching milky blue pots cut into puffballs. She wonders who did that to them, or if you could buy them like that. She glances up at the two windows on the first floor, more wooden shutters. The house is a blank face. Not like her flat, with its huge windows that let in the faces of all the people on the bus, you can virtually see what they're eating for their dinner. After a minute or two, she turns to leave. But at that moment, she sees a group of women walking towards her from the other direction. They are all tall and angular, and a split second later, she realises that one of them is Alex, and the other two look just like her, and that they must be her sisters. One has dark blonde hair down to her waist, the other has strawberry blonde hair in a top knot. They are a mass of hoop earrings, big leather bags with tassels, flip-flops, black nail polish, long skirts that swish when they move, suntans from other countries. They are loud, even from here. One of them says something and the other two tip back their heads and laugh. So many teeth, such big, wide mouths. She watches as they move towards Alex's front door. She recognises the smaller one now from the night of her birthday at the pub. Zoe. Alex removes a set of keys from inside the bag that is looped over her arm, puts one in the lock, and then there is the hallway, and the cat just visible, and a child, and she hears Alex say, "We're back!" And then there is the husband, Nathan, with his thick red hair, greeting her distractedly, and they all pile in, and the door closes, and Josie pictures wine being pulled from the big chrome fridge and olives being tipped into bowls, a water sprinkler flip-flopping lazily over the lawn in the back garden. She pictures it, and she wants it. She wants it more than anything. Confident now that Alex and her family are all firmly ensconced inside the house, she crosses the street. She walks past Alex's house, as if she is simply walking past her own house, but as she does so, she lets her fingertips trail across the climbing plant that graces Alex's front wall. She glances down and sees the remarkable purple and lime green face of a passion flower staring up at her from between the leaves, and her breath catches. She pulls it towards her, plucks it, and holds it in her hand the whole of the way home.